This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, small businesses are the engine of the economy. So how's the engine running? Does it need a tax tune-up or a medical insurance oil change? Join guest host Steve Inskeep for tomorrow's Talk of the Nation.
I feel kind of torn because if one of the girls feels like they love Evan, I don't want to take that away from somebody. But in the same sense, I'd be lying if I said I didn't want to be one of the last people standing. I'd be lying, blatantly lying to you.
Sarah came home a little tipsy from her date, and I was like, oh man, you know, what a way to make an impression, but obviously that didn't matter to Evan.
Yes, that's a clip from the latest hit reality television show, Joe Millionaire, on Fox TV. People like to hate him. They often deny watching them. But despite what we say in public, in private, an awful lot of us are tuning in to reality TV. And one thing is certain, like them or hate them, we all love to talk about them. So admit it, which reality show do you watch, which one has you addicted, and why? And what does this trend say about us? Our phone number is 800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Neil Gabler from member station WLIU in Southampton, Long Island. He's a senior fellow at the Lear Center for the Study of Entertainment at the University of Southern California and author of Life, the Movie, How Entertainment Conquered Reality. Neil Gabler, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much, Neil.
That's nice to say. Neil. This doesn't happen very often. Anyway, unlike most
confuse
people...
Confuse everyone.
Yes, absolutely. We even spell it the same, which is very unusual. But anyway, unlike most people, you don't place a value judgment on reality TV. You say that good or bad, they offer viewers something traditional narratives increasingly fail to do, which is...
Well, it's many things, actually. I think you can't understand reality programming without understanding that they're a response to a sense of narrative exhaustion and a challenge to the artifice of fiction. I mean, when you look at reality programming, what do they offer us? Well, they offer us better suspense than conventional fictional programming does because we don't really know how it's going to turn out. Everything is provisional. It's still unspooling. They offer us better identification than traditional fictional programs do because there are allegedly real people up there. They offer us higher stakes because something really is at stake. At least purportedly something is at stake. Either those girls or one of those girls is going to marry Joe Millionaire or she isn't. One of those bachelors is going to marry the bachelorette or he isn't. But there is actually something real at stake. When the set closes, the show isn't over, at least, allegedly. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, what they offer is authenticity, a sense of something that is real as opposed to all the artifice, again, that you get in fictional programs.
Something on television is real?
Well, at least allegedly real. You know, it's very interesting when you watch these shows because, you know, the people are supposed to be real people, enacting more or less real situations, exhibiting real emotions, more or less. And yet, I represent a kind of third way between reality and fiction. I think of the last sequence of The Bachelor, for example, where the man proposes to the woman, and we think now here is true romance. They are going to go off and ride off into the sunset, go get married. And yet we discover when they go on tour with one another, doing all the talk shows after the Bachelor is concluded, that they don't live in the same city. They have set no wedding plans. Indeed, it's highly unlikely that these two people are going to be married. So now we've got something that is this odd amalgam of real people playing roles. So that, again, they stand as the third way between fiction and reality.
We have an email challenge underway. If you have a title or a concept for a new reality TV show, send it to us at totn@npr.org. Michael Henderson from Traverse City, Michigan, contributed his idea for a new reality TV show, Joe Sixpack. Let's turn the whole millionaire thing around, take a group of trust fund millionaires who never earned a dime and put them on a pipeline construction crew or some other form of hard labor, then see how they hold up. But on the reality question, here's another email we got from Christopher Adams. is reality TV really that real? I'm having a hard time seeing where the reality is, putting a bunch of people in a fantastic home or off on some island for the sake of watching them fight. Seems a lot more contrived than real, and a celebrity's a reality? Even American Idol is no more real than the average game show. All I hear anyone talking about is how cruel Simon is anyway. That's the particularly acerbic judge on that TV show. I need to get back to my work now, as my job is all too real.
Well, I think that email is absolutely correct. I mean, what these programs, again, purport to do is to rip away the mask of civility. I mean, humiliation is a very big part of many of these programs. Duplicity is a very big part of these programs. I mean, when you look at Survivor, for example, one of the things that Survivor is about is the difficulty of balancing your individuality with the community. Because after all, what you have to do on the show is be number one in the end. But in order to be number one, you have to exploit other people in your community so that they will enable you to be number one. But in the process of doing that, you have to perform for that community. Meanwhile, on camera, away from the other people, you are telling the audience what you really feel, you know, what your real emotions are. So in a way, I mean, It's a kind of tension between the way we have to appear to other people in order to get our way and what we really feel. And almost all of these programs operate on that principle. We see people away from the group addressing us and telling us what they really are like.
Almost like the director on the DVD, you know, on that version of the DVD. You know, this is what I meant to do here, you know, in the scene.
Yes.
You know, yeah, okay.
Yes, except that, I mean, there is the performance becomes part and parcel of the entire program. I mean, it is the program. You are performing, and then you're deconstructing your performance for the audience.
Let's go to Laura, who's with us from Yorba Linda, California.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm kind of embarrassed, but I'm so addicted to these reality shows. I consider myself a well-educated woman. I've got my master's degree, and yet every night I flip the channels and see what horrible reality show is on. So I love watching people go through these human emotions and getting a little bit of a burst of their embarrassment, and I feel like it can go along with them as they go through their, you know, whatever horribly embarrassing situation it happens to be. So,
well, there are plenty of actors on TV who get horribly embarrassed on their sitcoms every night. Why are the reality shows more appealing?
True, but there's something about knowing that a writer didn't come up with this in the writing room, that these people are actually going through it in the moment, especially like Joe Millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
I love that show. It's so humiliating that these girls are putting up such shows, and then at the end they're going to say that this man doesn't have $50 million. He has, you know, $19,000 a year. And there's something about knowing what these girls are waiting for, that they're humiliating themselves and just waiting for this big letdown, that it's like watching those, you know, you hear about the old Coney Island where people used to stand on stilts and see how long they can last. It's something about watching the public humiliate themselves that I absolutely love. I feel horrible for it, but I can't get enough of it. So.
Neil Gabler, is this, you know, there's a German word, Schadenfreude.
Yes.
Taking and pleasure in the discomfort of others.
And that's certainly one of the things that's going on here. You know, one of the things that these programs do is they empower the audience. And they empower the audience partly through humiliation, but also by ennobling the audience as well. I mean, take a program, and this is right now the most popular of all the reality shows, the so-called reality shows, American Idol. I mean, American Idol does both simultaneously. It permits the audience to feel that wonderful power of humiliation as it boos vicariously people off the stage who are bad performers. But at the same time, it empowers the audience to select the next star.
Hmm.
And there is something almost moving in that process as people participate in choosing stars themselves, not allowing record companies to do it or movie studios to do it or television networks to do it, but they're doing it themselves. And it's interesting as well that at least the person they anointed the first time around on American Idol was not someone who was conventionally beautiful. It wasn't someone who was thin and blonde. It was someone who was slightly overweight, someone who was not the greatest talent in the world, but talented, someone who I think the audience could really identify with and feel that they were elevating that individual.
Laura, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks for taking the call.
And good viewing.
Okay.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's another response to our email challenge. Todd Willer from San Diego writes, frivolous lawsuit survivor, where you divide a bunch of attorneys into two teams where they file frivolous lawsuits against each other to knock them off the show. another email we have from John in Minneapolis. I had the quote-unquote pleasure of being on a reality dating show on two different occasions. In both instances, the show's director had a preconceived notion of how I was to act. I was wondering if the guest has encountered other contestants who've experienced similar situations.
I think that's a very, very interesting question, because one of the things about these reality programs that happens almost immediately is that the programs conventionalize themselves. And by that I mean, if you saw the first Survivor, for example, Richard Hatch emerged as the main character and also the winner. But the second go-round on Survivor, you had all of these real people vying to become the Richard Hatch or the Colleen character. They understood that a template had been established by the first show and that they were now trying to fill that template. And I think you see that not only on Survivor, but on a good many of these shows. In fact, at the end of The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, I should say, last week, there was a very interesting segment right at the very tail end of the show where you saw one of the bachelors with a hairdresser, the network then breaking the illusion that these guys were just, you know, ordinary Joes off the street. Mm-hmm. Here we had the hairdresser telling him how he ought to coif his hair, how his makeup ought to be applied, so that these real people are now filling the molds of conventional programming.
Here's another email, this from Kathleen Arnold in Snohomish, Washington. I'm a college-educated healthcare professional who's been keeping track of The Bachelor and Bachelorette since their unfortunate conception. It's entertainment. It's not real. It's TV. It's acceptable voyeurism and something to gossip about at work. I can chat about Ryan and Krista and not offend near as many people I do as when I discuss the state of politics and healthcare. I will literally sneak off tonight to get my trash TV fix if I can.
Voyeurism is a really important word to use on these programs, because one of the things that we haven't discussed yet and one of the things that is obvious in these programs is the role of sex. So many of these programs are dependent on sexual titillation. You know, you watch a soap opera, two people kiss and they may, you know, go off into the bedroom, but you know that they're not really going to do anything in that bedroom because they're an actor and an actress. Mm-hmm. When you watch reality programming and two people go off into the bedroom, you assume that something is going on, as happened, in fact, this week with Mojo and Evan on Joe Millionaire. Hmm. And that's something that's very exciting, and it's voyeurism really in its technical definition. I mean, watching people have sex. Now, you don't actually get to see them have sex in the United States, although you do on reality programs in Europe. But you can. But your imagination doesn't have to be all that active, and you don't have to suspend too much disbelief as you do with fictional television.
Well, let's go on with some more email challenge responders. Stuart Nelson in Tallahassee suggests, how about nation-building Iraqi style? It'll be the longest-running reality show of all time and the most costly in every way imaginable. Here's a suggestion from John Ryuta in Scappoose, Oregon. American Idol, IDLE, laid off Kmart, United Airlines, and Enron rank-and-file employees literally sing for their supper, medical benefits, and mortgage payments. And finally, Jeremy Werner in San Francisco suggests, like American Idol, except instead of getting a record deal, the winner is entered on an independent party ticket into the 2004 presidential race. That's a real one. They're doing that one. Neil Gabler, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Neil.
Neil Gabler is a senior fellow at the Lear Center for the Study of Entertainment at the University of Southern California and author of Life, the Movie, How Entertainment Conquered Reality. He was at member station WLIU in Southampton, Long Island. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.